show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's a minute and a half past the hour. Welcome to this Tuesday evening edition of the Horn. Titanic Tuesday, as it were, for this, the 7th day of May, 2013. This is the Head On Radio Network. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. The easiest place to go to get the live stream. Of course, you can also go to other platforms, other methodologies. We are fond in particular of the TuneIn radio app, as well as the Stitcher internet radio app for your iPhone, your smartphone, your Android device. Works also on tablet devices. There are other places as well, dar.fm, streama.com. We're listed on Roku devices. Goodness gracious. Isn't it amazing? The podcast feed address is at White Rose Society. .org under the subdomain for this program. Head On with Bob Kincaid. And you can always go to iTunes and get the podcast there for free, too. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Like I said, it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and we'll begin with a bit of fundraising information because, well, it's necessary. It's what makes all of this keep going. Crowd beginning to gather in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. Free, easy to access. Jump right in anytime. The conversation is great. It's a fun little real-time adjunct to what's going on here. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom, chatroom. No, we'll start with a very kind a kind fundraising challenge from our buddy Sal, who has put $100 on the table this evening to make sure that we get hopefully. Our fundraising goal and catch up with a little bit of last night, if you please. That would be awfully, awfully nice. Sal has kindly put that on the table in the hopes that others will match it. Doesn't matter how you do it, $5 at a time, $10 at a time, $25 at a time. It all adds up and it all helps. You can use the PayPal button at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, or you can also use the traditional mail service that is available. That address is at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. It's also, well, I'll repeat it here, The Horn, Head On Communications, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. Okie dokie, okie dokie. So, I was just looking. I think I've got 6,000 tabs open on the computer here. And we'll get through as many of them as we can. I'm sorry, Marty. Just got an email from Marty. He says, sniff, I'll miss tomorrow's live prayer meeting Wednesday. I'll be going to church at the local cathedral addressed at number 24 Willie Mays Plaza. That's right. Thanks to a friend, I'm going to the Church of Baseball. Well, that's better than just about any other you could go to. Hopefully, many miracles will transpire while you're there, Marty. Enjoy. Get something really, really cold and frosty. And enjoy one for me, please. There's nothing, well, nothing like a beer in the ballpark. It used to be there was nothing like a beer in the ballpark because, you know, you're sitting there in the sunshine, all that green grass in front of you. You're watching a baseball game. It's all kinds of good fun. But now there's nothing like a beer at a ballpark because the beer's $10. So I take that back about have one for me. Have one for yourself, Marty. Have two for yourself. But you may want to have them either before or after the game. Really? Really? $10 for a Coors Light? Feh. We did go to the ballpark while we were in Washington, D.C., Ferg and I did. And for a city the size of Washington, I was kind of surprised that they were only offering, you know, your sort of usual suspect beers. You'd think they would have done a deal with one of the local breweries to have some of their, you know, fresh and wonderful stuff, because they're around. I mean, my God, there's good local brew at the AAA ballpark down in Nashville. There's good local brew at a lot of minor league ballparks, but not at the Nationals Park. Yeah. Yeah. See, Marty just confirmed my worst suspicions. Out there in San Francisco, the beers are $10 for 12 ounces. And Marty says, and being California, you got to go and get it. They're not going to bring it to you in the stands. Oh no, that's sad. Hey, thanks, Jack, for stepping up and meeting part of Sal's challenge. We really appreciate it. Thank you very kindly. No, it's Titanic Tuesday here, and it's one of those evenings where you think you've got the show all lined out, and then something comes along, and suddenly you don't have the show all lined out anymore. We'll start with something. Well, no, I don't know if I'm going to start with this one or no. Do you remember how we kind of ended last night with the story about the woman in Nashville, was it? Yeah, it was Nash Vegas. The woman in the T-Mobile call center in Nashville who wound up losing her job because she peed too much. Remember? No. I'm not like, it wasn't like she was writing her name on the carpet in the call center or anything. She had a medical condition that required related to a pregnancy. Remember, we love the fetuses here. Except, I guess T-Mobile doesn't love the fetuses so much. She took medication for her pregnancy that made her have to drink a lot more water, which made her have to go to, and as a consequence, she wound up having to clock out just to go to the restroom and clock back in when she was done. Somewhere, there's a mid-level manager of a call center for T-Mobile that has a personally ungreased spit waiting for him or her in hell, if it was real. Sadly, in instances like this, it's not. Oh, well. So you remember that story. This country, our country, this once great nation, has developed a... Do you remember back during the Repig-Lickin' pageants, otherwise known as the primary season, when the Repig-Lickins in the audience clapped with mad approval at the idea of leaving a person to die on the floor because they were insured? You remember how a little Repig-Lickin' said, "Yay! Yay! Hallelujah! Yay, Ron Paul!" Remember that? Because I do. Well, even though they lost the election, the Repig-Lickin' philosophy appears to be gaining traction. And this story goes hand in hand with the idea of the prison industrial complex. The story, of course, comes out of Alabama-stan. It comes out of a part of a suburb of Birmingham called Hoover. I don't know if it's Hoover High School, but Hoover is notorious, well, not notorious, but noteworthy for churning, I mean, it's a football factory, Hoover is. If it's the same school I'm thinking of, they've got a very involved, engaged parent booster organization. It's a fairly wealthy athletic program. In fact, you could say that the high school is a life support system for the athletic program. Let's just say that. Other parts of the school, not so much. A story reported by Courthouse News Service, and if you don't go there, you probably ought to, because they get a lot of really good stories. This is simply how the copy reads. after a diabetic high school student fell asleep in study hall, the school police officer slammed her face into a filing cabinet, arrested her, and took her to jail. You got that? She got sent to suspension study hall because she had cut class. And we all know that in Alabamistan, that's damn near a capital offense. And she happens to be diabetic. And anybody who is diabetic or pre-diabetic or proto-diabetic knows what happens when your blood sugar begins to run low. I've had, I guess I've got the diabetes now. I take my little pill a couple of times a day. But I didn't have it as a child, but when I did, when I was a kid, I would appear, I've been hypoglycemic all my life. And when that happens, anybody who knows about it, it's a miserable, you get shaky, you sweat, you get sleepy. And some combination of that happened to Tyushka Avery. When she nodded off in suspension study hall, she was reading Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn. And this is all based on court documents. And it reads as follows. Ashlyn Avery was in Hoover High School's in-school suspension for what was termed skipping class. While in ISS, Ashlyn was assigned to read Huckleberry Finn. As a result of a combination of Ashlyn's chronic medical conditions, including sleep apnea, type 2 diabetes, and asthma, and we could probably have the asthma conversation. Why would she have asthma? Oh, gosh, might it be because there are oodles of coal-fired power plants all over that part of Alabama spewing filth into the air? Yeah, well. She dozed off during in-school suspension. That's when the in-school suspension Joshua Whited... ironies couldn't get much thicker here, could they? Joshua Whited noticed that Ashlyn had dozed off, and he walked over to her cubicle and smacked the cubicle with his hand. You know, trying to wake her up. Instead, he knocked the cubicle into Ashlyn's head. Tyushka Avery is her mother. Ashlyn woke up and went back to reading Huckleberry Finn. But the diabetes doesn't just go away because Joshua White Guy comes over and slaps your cubicle. This ain't faith healing. So when she dozed off the second time, Joshua White Guy, Whited, removed the book from her, took it out of her hands, and then slammed the book onto the desk, at which point the book bounced and hit her in the chest. That's when young Ashlyn was told to leave the room, and she was, by this point in time, something approaching hysterical, terrified. Hysterical is probably not the word. Terrified is probably more the word. While she was speaking with her mother on her cell phone and walking down the hall, Officer Christopher Bryan, the in-school resource officer, otherwise known as the school cop, you know, one of those people that the NRA says is going to protect the cheerins, came up behind her and hit her struck her backpack. That's when Ashlyn said, "Leave me alone." Because it's high school, and when somebody hits you in your backpack, it's better to say, "Leave me alone," than turning around and starting a fight. She didn't know who was behind her. She's still on the phone with her mom, by the way. That's when Officer Christopher Bryan, sworn to uphold the law and protect the students of Hoover High School, drove Ashlyn Avery face first into a file cabinet. And having driven her face into a file cabinet, Officer Christopher Bryan then handcuffed her. Now let's review. This is all initially because she cut class, whatever that means. Then it's because while assigned to read Huckleberry Finn, she, with sleep apnea, which means you don't sleep very well through the night, she, with asthma, she, with type 2 diabetes, dozed off. For that, in Alabamistan, you get your face driven into a file cabinet. For that, you get terrified by Jason White guy, Whited. And for that, you get handcuffed and dragged off to the police station. No, really, they put her under arrest and took her to the police station. She was so horrified and so sick at the time, she vomited in the cruiser. I guess she's lucky the cop didn't make her lick it up. That necessitated taking her to the Children's Health Center Emergency Department, where she was variously x-rayed and examined. She had no acute fractures, but she had to have her right arm immobilized with a cast, and she had to wear that for a month. She had to have follow-up care to her shoulder, her arm, and her wrist, and wound up in counseling because of the trauma to which she had been subjected by these caring law enforcement and educational professionals. Jesus Christ. That's education. That's education in the Confederacy. Waggy, don't feel bad. In the chat room, Waggy says, "I don't know if I can listen to this story without hollering loud enough to annoy the neighbors." Well, don't feel alone or anything, Waggy, because this is my third time through the copy, and it's the first time I've been able to get through it without shouting. And I may yet. Lottie asking, "At some point in this story, does young Ashlyn kick Joshua in the nuts?" No. And she doesn't kick Officer Christopher Bryan, sworn upholder of the law, in said scrotum either. Because if she did that, they'd probably kill her. I'm just guessing about the probable racial component of this. Young female in Alabama. Gone are the days of the hoop skirt, I suppose. Yeah, you're right, Dr. John. It's bullying by both a peer and a cop. Well, thank you very kindly, Marty. Marty just added to Sal's challenge. He sent in his baseball park beer money. Thank you, Marty. Thank you very much. He said, "This is the beer I likely won't be having at the ballpark. I'll be helping my friend with his son and daughter, both 9 years old. Alcohol consumption will be at a minimum, if not zero." Thank you, Marty. Thank you. So now we're only $65 away from meeting Sal's challenge. Thank you. Jack, noting girl arrested. On what charge? I hate to seem trite. Jack, but charges? In Alabamistan, they don't need no stinking charges. Remember, this is the state that pulls over a Mercedes-Benz executive for having an international driver's license and a passport. That's a Mercedes-Benz executive. What kind of probable cause you think they need for, say, a 15-year-old melanin-enhanced child? Yeah, me neither. None. So there's that. On the other hand, this kind of thing can happen because so many of our public schools, and probably private ones, have been turned into, to one degree or another, and at the connivance of organizations like the National Republican and Confederate Rifle Association, armed camps. Never mind that this is the kind of conduct that leads to children acting out in bad ways, but we won't go into that. We've got what's called in parts of the South. I learned about it during a trip to Selma last summer, and it was just absolutely horrifying the first time I heard the phrase, the school to prison pipeline. Basically, an effort to get anybody who challenges whatever sense of how things ought to be inside the school system, they hustle them into these alternative schools that wind up being prisons. By the way, Waggy Sergi wants you to know. He says, let Waggy know that I already did the annoying the neighbors scream. Actually, I probably went further than that. The entirety of the city of Everman, where I am currently at work, probably heard my damn, and chances are Forest Hill, Kennedale, Rendon, and part of Fort Worth heard it too. This is disgusting, Bob, and the civil rights suit that I just read she filed via alternate, good grief, I hope she wins and cleans out those assholes. Sergi, believe me, I know about cleaning out assholes from Fort Worth. Oh. Yeah, there is. I mean, these are suit papers. They have filed a civil rights suit. And what will ultimately happen is it'll be settled. And that's what insurance is for. But not before, and certainly even the law recognizes that paying money damages after something like this is cold comfort. How comfortable is this young woman going to be back in school? How comfortable has she been back in schools? Marty says, not just armed camps, Bob. I remember referring to school in Lancaster, California, Upper Mojave Desert, Southern California, as a prison, and my peers did too. Now, more and more, they are prison camps, and some schools specifically are prison camps. Irish Dave asking the question, so are they so backward in Hoover that the school cops don't have no tasers? No, see, he was probably being gentle and treating her all ladylike by not tasering her and instead just driving her face into a file cabinet. Sheesh. But let us compare and contrast, if you will. This is another one of those cases of a story sitting around in the stack until something comes along that makes everything make sense. Or make bringing it up sort of make even more sense. This goes back to Friday on the front porch, a note I received from Dr. John, who said, and remember, the reason we're bringing this up is because so many of our schools have been turned into, you know, school-to-prison pipeline transfer centers, armed cops walking around. Yeesh. By the way, I don't know if you noticed it, but Piyush Bobby Jindal's little let's give public taxpayer money to Jesus schools scam got smoked today by the Supreme Court of the state of Louisiana. And that's saying something. The Supreme Court of the state of Louisiana said no, Exorcist Jindal. You can't give state money to support your fervor for religious education. Kind of a beautiful moment. But no, what I was getting at was this note I got from Dr. John. The subject line last Friday said, this principal deserves a front porch Friday golf clap. Indeed he does. In a dangerous, struggling school, he expels the cops and expands the arts. Scores go up and behavior problems go down. Well done. And with Margaret Thatcher only coming to fairly fresh terms with that spit she's roasting on in hell, being fairly recently in the dirt, I'm reminded that she was the author of the concept of TINA. There is no alternative. Same woman who said there's no such thing as culture. But no, there is an alternative. And sometimes it's merely a matter of looking for it. And the story to which Dr. John referred is an abject, straight-up, bright-line opposite to the idea of having children, of treating children who fall asleep in class like first-degree murderers. We're talking about Orchard Gardens School in Roxbury, Massachusetts. It's been there since 2003 and was born to trouble. Out of 800 students, more than 90% qualify for free or reduced lunch, 25% are learning to speak English, and 25% require individual education plans to meet special needs. And the attempts to teach failed miserably. Violence was rampant. They got to where they wouldn't even allow students to wear backpacks for fear that they would bring weapons to school. It is telling, in fact, that after 1 year teaching at that school, 50% of the teachers who had put in their 1 year didn't come back. By 2010, the school had resource officers, you know, the cops with the guns, all over it, and things were going from bad to worse in a straight-up hurry. And for some reason, a man named Andrew Bolt applied for the job of principal there in 2010. In an NBC News story, Andrew Bolt said that his friends told him it was career suicide to take the job. You don't want to go to Orchard Gardens, was the phrase. When Andrew Bolt took over, though, having taken the job, he tried something a little novel. The first thing he did was throw out the cops, the so-called resource officers. Then what he did was to bring back the arts. You know, music, drama, painting, that kind of thing. The musical instruments had actually been put in locked storage years before. The dance studio, the art studios were reopened. Teachers were put in to teach those subjects. That was 2010. By 2011, significant increases had shown up in the number of students reading at grade level and the percent of students proficient on grade level math assessments. By this year, Orchard Gardens is a completely different place. The test scores and the grades continue to improve. And the students, well, you'll notice the story of the young woman having her face slammed into a file cabinet came from Alabamistan, not from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and certainly not from Orchard Gardens. Principal Bolt says, "We have our occasional typical adolescent problems, but nothing that's out of the normal for any school." I mean, this is a K through 8. K through 4, I'd say, is generally not too terrible. But something happens in what we call middle school, such that by 7th grade or so, there's no amount of money that would get me to teach a 7th grade, or attempt to teach a 7th grader. And the people who do exist largely in the realm of the angels in my book. Well, all teachers do, for the most part. But the part of the article that I'm reading notes that what Principal Bolt did was not radical or revolutionary. It was, in fact, just intelligent. Because we know that when you stop treating education like a factory process and start treating it with the degree of seriousness that it deserves, and by seriousness I mean including the full gamut of the educational experience that children of that age need, things turn around. The story I'm looking at cites studies. For instance, a 2012 study by the National Endowment for the Arts, its executive summary says, quote, "At-risk students who have access to the arts in or out of school also tend to have better academic results, better workforce opportunities, and more civic engagement." the visual arts teacher at Orchard Gardens is Chris Plunkett. Chris Plunkett says, they need something more than test prep and more than learning that there's only one answer to every problem. Even though they don't realize how much they're learning and how much they're strengthening, it's happening, and I think that transcends into other areas. I think you're right. Of course, the real measure is in the children themselves, and the story cites the experiences of eighth grader Kevon Little. With the arts in place and the cops gone, Kevon Little's grades have gone up, and having completed eighth grade, or completing eighth grade, he's been accepted into the Boston Arts Academy for high school. Hint for those outside the Boston area, myself included, that's a big deal. Here's what Kevon Little said. Now that the teachers actually help me and push me on the right track, I can actually see a future for myself. I've been more open. I've expressed myself more than I would have before the arts have came. Square that up against that dumbass documentary Waiting for Superman. I'm one of those weirdos who was given a healthy dose of the arts in school. And I saw a lot of other kids who were exposed to the arts in school. And it really, really does make a difference. Because when you grind away at a child with test prep, eventually that begins to take a toll. Children are not machines, and they're certainly not adults. And that part of the study that said they have more civic involvement, children who've been exposed to the arts in school grow up to have more civic involvement? Well, of course they do. Because they have a broader way of looking at existence than merely to eat and excrete and die, which is what the current consumer model of education would have us turn our children into, little consumer automatons. I like the idea of a country where the plumber quotes Shelley, and where the furnace worker dissects the grammar of the sports writer. That's a good country. I like a country where a woman who spends her days cutting hair spends her evenings considering Impressionist art or postmodern art. And while tractor pulls and NASCAR races are fine, I think we're probably a better culture when we also throw... Hey, Junior, before we go to the tractor pull, what do you say we stop by the art museum? Or just maybe walk through the sculpture garden. Nah, it ain't sissy stuff. Not at all. Some of these problems are not insoluble. They're only insoluble if we assume that the same things that are leading to the failures are the only tools we have. Ever since Dr. Bill mentioned it, and can I please say that if you're not tuned in to Dr. Bill from 4 to 6 on Monday through Wednesday, you are missing out on a magnificent experience. I'm not going to implore you or plead you or plead with you or beg you or to listen. But my God, if your mind doesn't get absolutely stretched like silly putty over those 2 hours, nobody can do it. Today, for instance, Dr. Bill started at point A, and it's kind of like a mystery. Everything seems straightforward. He goes through 2 hours of conversation and broadcasting, and then at the very end he says, and that's why you get the Civil War. And I'm the one who's sitting here so-called producing him, and I was like, what? Damn. Podcast or live, treat yourself. Now, granted, today's podcast will be screwed up because I screwed up I'm sorry, but the first 15 minutes are kind of a mess. But after that, everything, yeah, and I'll try to make sure that doesn't happen again. I forgot to throw the 17th switch. Dr. Bill gets emails saying that the reason people aren't calling the program is because nobody wants to interrupt him. Let me speak for Dr. Bill here, because I am authorized in this instance. He welcomes being interrupted. So, listen via podcast, fine. But try it out live sometimes and ring him up. Same number as here, 304-658-3333. It's easy. But that takes me back to something that Texas Betsy, since we seem to have wandered off into the fields of education, that Texas Betsy sent me. You know, Texas Betsy is a teacher, and a damned fine one at that. I would have been thrilled and honored for any of my children to have been in any of her classes. You give me a school full of Texas Betsys, and the children that she teaches will be changed. Any given child of hers in her classroom comes away a better human being. And after all, that's kind of the goal of teaching, isn't it? Texas Betsy says, as I've mentioned before, our education system, at least in Texas, and it's probably not at least in Texas, provides very different educations for the high achievers and the low achievers. The school I'm in now has most classes grouped heterogeneously, but we are test results grouped, not ability grouped, for small group instruction within those classes, and homogeneously grouped for 80% of math instruction, until now. Now, we have the results back from the state tests with only 11 school days to prepare them to retest. And fifth graders must pass the test in order to go to middle school. So we've divided them into their fourth different math group configuration of the year. You know, if you talk to a child psychologist, they'll say that in a child's world, children crave. And they'll use that word, crave, structure. That they like a little bit of order in their life. And what does it say when you're putting children into their fourth different math grouping of the year? So Betsy continues, she says, those kids who passed both tests are in large groups working on fantastic integrated curriculum projects with loose guidelines and direct instruction only when warranted. The rest of the learning happens independently or informally with peers. I have one of these large groups in the afternoon, and I presented each student with a check for $1,000 on the first day with instructions to pay for 4 years of college, including room and board, buy a house of $300,000 or less. Oh, I'm sorry, $1,000, $1 million. I presented each student with a check for $1 million on the first day, with instructions to pay for 4 years of college, including room and board, buy a house for $300,000 or less, furnish the house, buy a car, and take the family on vacation. We estimated our costs in ink on the first day, and they're pretty clueless about what things cost. Good project. I didn't invent or choose it, but I like it, as he says. I start the period with 20 kids, but end it with 29 because I have the largest room and one of the other teachers has kindergarten dismissal duty 20 minutes before fifth grade dismisses. My morning group, on the other hand, is 9 kids who failed both math and reading on the state assessment and the lower of the two groups that meet that description. I'd love to tell you that the plan for this group is to work on the skills that these particular 9 need in math, or even to work on a few skills that might enable them to pass the next time. Really, I'd love to tell you that I'm giving them the kinds of building blocks that will help them understand math next year, no matter what grade they find themselves in. But such is not the case. No, I am following a specific set of lesson plans written before we knew which students failed, without consideration for the specific areas in which these students failed, and lessons that are meant to be timed. Within a 3-hour math block, I'm actually expected to use a timer for 3- and 7-minute sections. Not me. Never. They can fire me if they want. I wrote 2 of these. One is attached. We won't go into it. But I won't be following it exactly. The other problem with these plans is that they are the worst of what never worked during the year. Hey, it didn't work. Let's do it some more. I'm thinking the scientific method was lost on a few administrators somewhere, but who the hell am I? The plans are drive-by instruction at warp speed. Exactly what these kids don't need. If incidental learning and 30 activities in a morning worked for these kids, they wouldn't be in the lowest group in the grade. My class is doing about 1/3 of what's in each plan, but we're doing it right. We are not starting with a vocabulary lesson full of bizarre words with adult definitions at 7:40 a.m. Hell, that doesn't work on me. They'd be asleep or causing trouble by 7:41 if I did. I'm not laughing at, I'm laughing with and for. No, we've made our giant rug into graph paper, and we start out on the rug moving numbers, lining up sums along giant construction paper decimal points, and figuring out what bizarre words with adult definition, and figuring out what 3 or 4 different numbers might have in common. Then, once we figured it out, we learn the math vocabulary to talk about what we've done. We even translate textbook definitions into fifth grade sentences, which are actually closer to second grade sentences. My lesson plan is the only one that includes homework. Everyone else has the entire responsibility for student achievement put on the teacher. I'm also the only one of the 7 teachers who goes over the test the following day and has the kids review Thursday's skills again on Friday and Monday and Tuesday, sometimes even by integrating them into something that is on the schedule for Friday or Monday or Tuesday. Everyone else teaches for 2.5 hours and tests for 30 minutes on the same day and thinks they know what the kids have learned. My homeroom math class had the highest mean score on the tests and the highest passing rate, and every single kid in my math intervention groups passed. So the principal and assistant principal haven't dropped in since I told them on day one how closely I'd be following the plans and how much I'd be using my professionalism and experience in my 11 days with my morning group, but neither have they suggested to any other fifth grade teacher that they adopt my methods instead of the attached. Oh, well, I'm looking for a job that's a better fit for next year. Maybe somewhere where they allow me to be a professional. In closing, Betsy asks, is it summer yet? No, not yet. No, sadly, Betsy, I fear that it is going to sort of remain for a while in this country the winter of our discontent. Regarding all this, Dr. John writes, but in a country where plumbers know Shakespeare, Bob, people might start to realize that freedom doesn't mean you can consume whatever you want. It means that you don't have to consume to live authentically. And they might even realize that Horkheimer said that first. And they might read Horkheimer and Adorno or even gasp marks. And then where would we be? Call Phil, the Marxist plumber, BR549. I joke, but Dr. John is right. Still, I like the idea of a dry cleaner in the back room with the cleaning fluid, hopefully not toxic, looking at a piece of clothing and saying, "Out, out, damned spot." It's a better world when that happens. Ron in Raleigh writes, under the subject line, old school, "Hey, Bob, it's not that people don't know what works, it's that the testing industry and the aforementioned school-to-prison pipeline don't want thinking." Yeah, let's do remember that a big hunk of that testing industry is all muddled up with a fella by the name of, it'll come to me, it's right on the Neil Bush. You know, a member of that Bush family. This is the guy who went to Thailand and caught the clap and said he thought he got it from his pillowcase. No, he said he got it from the hooker and because he was in his room one night and the hooker just showed up. He thought that's how things went in Thailand. So, yeah, I mean, if the hooker shows up, reminds me of the "I want to lip your stocking" scene from Lost in Translation. Now, just to go back, because I walked all over Ron's words, which are true, it's not that people don't know what works, it's that the testing industry and the aforementioned school-to-prison pipeline don't want thinking, reasoning, or engaged students. Remember, the Texas Republican Party put a no-thinking-in-school plank in their platform. "I attended segregated schools in Virginia," Ron says, "yet we had all the programs you mentioned, that and old-school teachers who cared." Sergi. "Evening again, Bob." Hi, Sergi. "Another quick note for you, this one on the topic of the effect arts programs have in schools. I grew up in and still live in a semi-rough area of inner city Fort Worth. Morningside Park is no Near East Side, Terrell Heights, or Poly, but it's still fairly gritty. One of the factors making Morningside and Morningside Park less rough is likely the fact that Morningside Elementary School, where I attended K through 5th, is, for an inner city school, very well funded and exposes its students to technology. I was learning internet applications in the first grade and also exposes the students to horticulture at very early ages. The school sports a full garden that harvests hundreds of pounds of food per year. And surprise, Morningside has fewer disciplinary problems than other elementary schools in the inner city here, and its students are less likely to be problem students come middle and high school. Why? Well, like it's been stated, it's not all test prep. It's also a fully interactive educational experience. And sure, I hated the experience there, as with the other schools I went to afterward, but the arts programs there were truly an amazing experience, and while I've made many mistakes in my life since then, I am likely a more creative and intelligent adult, thanks in large part to the positive, enriching start I had to my educational career." Signed, Sergi. Funky Town's Tempest. That's Fort Worth, y'all. Marty says, "Dr. John is indeed correct, hence the drive to change education from teaching to programming." And there you go. We have an operative philosophy at work in this country that, ultimately, it's a matter of getting things bass-ackwards. We have, in the last decade and a half, reached the entirely erroneous conclusion that children exist to provide a reason for the educational testing industry to make money, not that the educational testing industry exists to make sure that we're getting children properly taught. Sometimes I have a hard time realizing that I am the age I am. But I remember What was it? It was like second grade, fifth grade, seventh grade, tenth grade. Every two or three years, we went through a battery of testing. But we didn't do it constantly. It would seem obvious that constant testing means that a lot of other things have to go by the wayside. It's obvious to you, it's obvious to me, obvious to us. But not so much to the people whose, I don't know, paycheck depends on it not being obvious. And so we find ourselves in this mess. And we find ourselves with goofy statistics like the United States being behind Burkina Faso in geography knowledge. And immediately we think, you know what we got to do? We need to test them some more. Well, why do we have to test them some more? Well, because that's what the educational testing companies tell us. Well, why would they tell us that? Well, you know, because they're the Oh, you mean it's not because they want to make more money? Oh, didn't think about that. Yeah, see? So there we have the opening. We ain't done yet, but you're welcome still to get your licks in. There we have the opening filibobster. Jump right in if you've got comments or thoughts on this or just about any other topic. Hey, good news just broke. We've got a new co-signer on the AIC Act. And I'm really proud to say, I won't give out the name yet, because I'm not sure if I'm allowed to. I may have already exceeded my brief on this. But I've just heard that the first member of the Massachusetts delegation has signed on to the AIC Act. This is big. And thanks to all the work. Thanks for all the work that went into it. We are making our way nicely toward meeting Sal's challenge. We are now only $40 away from meeting it, and that's great. If we could meet that and jump in and catch up with a little bit of yesterday, that would certainly be a help. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. Green News Report is on the way with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. It's right at the top of the hour. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Tuesday, May 7, 2013.
Our climate is changing. The weather is becoming more intense. It's going to cost a lot of money and a lot of lives.
In an early wildfire season, California governor warns climate change is expensive.
Flames shooting as high as 1,000 feet in the air. Explosions rocking the streets as if there'd been an earthquake.
Record fine for a natural gas pipeline explosion. J.P. Morgan accused of Enron-style manipulation. Plus,
the government is forcing me, taking my right to choose away from me, sticking a mercury light bulb down my throat and saying, it's good for you.
Right-wingers like money-saving light bulbs unless they help the environment.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The city of Dallas! Hitting a record low. So much for Al Gore's global warming prediction.
This is your Green News Report. So, Desi Doyen, it snows in May, and Fox News takes this as a sign of there is no global warming. So, do they really not get it? Are they really that stupid? Are they really that misinformed? Or are they paid to be that stupid and misinformed?
I don't pretend to know what they're thinking, but...
Well, you could pretend. Just make something up. Fox News does. They make a lot of money doing it.
Oh, that's a good idea. It is certainly surprising that across the entire channel, they all don't get the science.
What do you have for us today in not made up news?
Well, remember that deadly natural gas pipeline explosion near San Francisco in 2010?
Some first thought a plane had crashed into the neighborhood, but it was a gas pipe 3 feet underground that had ruptured and exploded, leaving a crater 30 feet wide with flames spewing out in every direction.
It blew up a residential neighborhood and killed 8 people. And now a record $2.5 billion fine has been recommended for utility giant Pacific Gas and Electric for that natural gas pipeline explosion. If approved, the fine would be the largest in state history levied by the California Public Utility Commission. And that's giving PG&E a break. The commission said full fines for every violation they found would be more than the company is worth.
I see. So again, we've got another too big to jail, too big to fail company in PG&E?
It sure looks like it.
Go figure.
Remember how Enron manipulated California's electricity market back in 2001?
Oh, I do.
The New York Times reports this week that banking giant J.P. Morgan Chase is now under investigation by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission for a similar scheme. They're accused of rigging electricity prices in California and Michigan to, quote, falsely appear attractive and costing those states at least $83 million in overcharges.
Oh, well, no worries. J.P. Morgan, also too big to jail, too big to fail, so I'm sure they'll skate with a slap on the wrist.
It's official. 2012 was the ninth hottest year globally.
Thus, proving Fox News is right that it's getting colder because it wasn't the first hottest year globally.
The last 12 years were among the 13 hottest years on record. That's according to the World Meteorological Organization. Now remember, last year, 2012, was the hottest year on record for the continental United States. But because of record extremes of rain and snow in Europe, 2012 was only the ninth hottest year for the planet.
And that's how Fox News says, oh look, the planet is cooling.
And the planet's wet regions are likely to get wetter, while the driest regions will get drier in coming decades due to warming of the atmosphere caused by increased levels of carbon dioxide. That's according to a new NASA analysis projecting higher global temperatures will shift precipitation patterns around the planet, bringing more extreme rainfall to the tropics and more frequent, deeper droughts to drier areas of the globe. In California, changes in weather patterns are already having an immediate impact. After an unusually dry winter, California's mountain snowpack is only 17% of normal this year, which does not bode well for the summer wildfire season that is already off to an unusually early and ferocious start. At a press conference for California's Wildfire Awareness Week, California Governor Jerry Brown warned that climate change is expensive and pledged to take action.
Our climate is changing. The weather is becoming more intense. The big issue, how do we adapt? And adapting is going to be very, very expensive because whatever we need to spend today, it's going to be more tomorrow.
Finally, how's this for absurdity? A new study finds that right-wing Republicans will buy money-saving, energy-efficient light bulbs as long as the packaging doesn't mention anything about the environment. A Wharton School of Business study found participants chose money-saving light bulbs at the same rate regardless of their political ideology, except when the packaging also mentioned benefits to the environment. Self-identified conservatives refused the money-saving bulbs whenever the packaging said anything about being good for the environment.
Which is hilarious if you remember back about a year or so ago when Fox News was pretending to be outraged about having to buy light bulbs with mercury in them. Of course, they don't have to, but their pretend concern was how bad mercury is for the environment. They'll say anything, won't they? Fox News. For much more on all of our stories today and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Eight minutes past the hour as we begin the second hour of this Titanic Tuesday. I remind you, Titanic Tuesday was named by our buddy Jim for the right-winger who, for reasons known but to God or the Flying Spaghetti Monster or the messages coming to it through his flashlight, decided he had the talent to be a radio guy, who explained one time to one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, snake-handling, strychnine-drinking, floor-rolling, tone-speaking listeners that I chuckle every time I think about it. I just love this. That there are fossilized ancient seashells in the rock strata of mountainous West Virginia because of the movement of the Titanic plates. It is what it is. By the way, just as a sort of a postscript, or a midscript, I guess, because we've got another education story that's sort of segues us into a story. Well, it's kind of a story that, well, the young girl getting her face slammed. That's a feminism story too. Because big bad officer Brian, yeah, he'd think twice about doing that maybe to somebody his own size. But Dr. John sent this along because this is, after all, Teacher Appreciation Day. Michelle Bachman just tweeted her thanks to teachers on this National Teacher Appreciation Day. Dr. John notes, Michelle Bachman homeschools. Only girls. No boys. They've foster parented a lot of children, and they're all only girls. And some foster homes choose to do that, but not all foster parents are, one of whom is, you know, Marcus. Michelle Bachman homeschools. Michelle Bachman says teaching evolution without creationism is censorship. Michelle Bachman wants to abolish the Department of Education. Michelle Bachman hates teachers and teaching. Thanks on Teacher Appreciation Day. Oh, Jim reminding me of some of the other wisdom that used to flow out of the radio box over in Beckley. Don't forget that helium in your tires will reduce wear and tear, okay? Yeah, that was another one of those gems, those little pearls of wisdom. Oh. Hey, Isaac. Well, welcome to the chat room, or welcome back to the chat room. I said, you know, some foster parents only foster parent young girls for a reason. And that was the precise reason, Betsy. I remembered that factor. But neither of those parents were creepy, 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 really ultra weird, riding a lion through Narnia, Marcus Bachman. I'll tell you what. Before we go any further, Sandra's with us on the Skype line. Bob Kincaid Horn, if you want to try that too sometime. Are you there, Sandra?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, beautifully.
I just was, I don't know. I mean, I suppose maybe you're not talking about it, but I have to mention those women in Cleveland.
Yeah, no, that's on the list, but no, we can bring it right to the forefront.
Well, it's just, I mean, it's so disturbing. I didn't realize that they were basically down the road.
Yeah.
From where they were snatched.
Yeah, just sort of, and yeah, how many years?
I mean, it's a bit, yeah, it's like 10, I mean, I'm sorry, I don't care. That's a massive law enforcement failure. It cannot be looked upon any other way at this point. Wow.
Well, the first word that came to my mind was negligence.
Well, and...
Because you know what? If these had been three millionaire heiresses...
Well, yeah.
I mean, we can say that, can't we? They're not going to let Paris Hilton?
Right.
If Paris Hilton disappeared for 15 minutes, you know, there'd be a new manifestation of the Amber Alert out, you know, the heiress alert.
Well, I mean, apparently when this all went down, they put an Amber Alert out for the white one, but not for the girls of color, which, you know, that's, you know, back a decade ago.
Yeah, may it please the court, I rest my case.
And it's just, you know, you think about it, and that was, whatever, it was 2004 or 2003, but it's just... And not much has changed because CNN is only focusing on kind of the white girl.
Oh, God.
But the thing that's really hideous is, you know, I mean, I'm sure we're going to get all the really horrible, sordid details of the hell that these, you know, I just read that they were beaten so much that they lost four different babies.
Dear God.
And you know that kind of stuff. And,
well, you know, it's a bit of a white girl story, but there's kind of a I don't know, something along the line. Before this story broke, the story came out about Elizabeth Smart. You remember Elizabeth Smart?
Oh, we heard talking about the absentee. I'm not absentee, but abstinent only sex education.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you can tell it.
Yeah, well, but so Elizabeth Smart, you know, was captured by these radical Mormons and raped repeatedly and only escaped after about a year, during which time, you know, she was taken out in public and walked around and, you know, nobody noticed. Yeah, because, well, yeah, they're like that, right? But they asked her, she said one of the questions that they asked her, and that's why the reason I thought about this. Was you were talking about the beatings that these three women underwent and losing babies and, having the babies beaten out of them, basically, which is just a horrible concept to even ponder.
Yeah.
But people asked Elizabeth Smart, and even the question pisses me off, Sandra. Well, why didn't you just run away when you got the first chance? As if the duty was on her. As if, you see what I'm, you blame the victim.
Well, you know, same thing with all those women who were murdered in Boston back in the 60s. How in the world did that one person kill up all those women?
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah.
But
I just think that it's, and also the other thing that was bugging me, of course, is the non-ending, oh, it's a miracle, and, you know, the sort of God-bothering. It's like, oh, my God, you know, can we escape this and just talk about that this man who helped them had a moral compass, and he helped this woman And that's what got these girls freed? Not no miracle or God?
No,
oh,
I'm so,
man.
I'm so worn out with God. I got another, and it's not even Wednesday yet, you know?
Ugh.
But right. I mean, no, it has to be a miracle. It can't be that a human being did a decent human thing.
This is what that's what it was. Mr. I was eating my McDonald's, you know, bless him, if I may go there and say whatever. Because so many people these days, they're not going to take the time to do jack. And so that's what, and the girls using the the girl using the opportunity to get help. You know, that's what saved these girls. Because obviously a decade has gone by. And I read a story, a part of it where somebody reported seeing a naked girl one time in the backyard. They called the police, and the police ignored it.
Yeah, and see, that's why I went to the Elizabeth Smart story, Sandra, is because people have asked her about the runaway thing, and she said that after she had been raped, she felt so dirty and so filthy that she felt like that alone meant that you know. And these are things that happen in minds that most people can't really get their heads around, because it's the kind of thing that doesn't happen to your mind until you're in that situation. But the reason she came out so boldly against abstinence-only education, she went on and she told a story. And she said in the school where she went, that she had a school teacher when she was a child, before she was kidnapped, who talked to them once about abstinence and then compared sex, and this makes me crazy, compared sex to chewing gum. And Elizabeth Smart said, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm that chewed up piece of gum. Nobody re-chews a piece of gum. You throw it away. And that's how easy it is to feel like you no longer have worth. You know, so that's probably part of the answer. Once you get past the cop negligence, and once you get past the theological argument of, if this is a miracle, then why didn't God do it 10 years ago before they had four babies beaten out of them? That's the answer. Terrible things happen in those situations. And meanwhile, just a guy sitting at McDonald's, like, you know, boom. Yeah, and you're right. Bless him.
Yeah, I'm not talking about no... Yeah, you know, cloud being. I just, you know, anyway, just the whole tone of the reporting. It's like, no, that's not going to cover your ass for, you know, what it says about the state of things to me. You know, no, they never address anything related to public policy and anything that could possibly mitigate shit like this. No, we got to hear about God working some kind of miracle. It's just like, oh,
well, yeah,
no.
Compare that to this. I had a late Moran Monday nomination from Tim in L.A. Last night, citing the grandmother of the children, one of the five-year-old shot the two-year-old. Remember Kentucky?
Oof,
yeah, I know. Yeah, so grandma says, well, and this is who Tim was nominating for Moran Monday. The grandma says, well, we don't understand it, but it's God's will.
Right. I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, you know, it's so predictable. It's mind-numbing. That's disgusting, you know. Yeah, you just want to take somebody out like that and let them get more familiar with guns. That's horrible.
Yeah. And by the way, just, you know, not to run off into the weeds or anything, but it turns out that some folks from the German TV network RTL went down to that little town in Kentucky. So, two men there after the funeral service went over and just punched him for the hell of it.
Punched who?
The TV crew. Just, you know, a German TV crew just standing, not, you know, they're not, don't have the microphone in anybody's faces. The, you know, these necks just went and said, well, let's go punch, let's go, there's that liberal media, let's go punch them. And they went over. And here's the fun part. They then turned to a newspaper reporter after they punched the cameraman and bloodied his nose and knocked him down. They turned to a newspaper reporter and said, if you had any sense, you'd get out of here. You're next, buddy.
You know, there's a hideous empathy deficit in this country. And, you know, it just seems to be one horrific tale of misery after another. And, these families, how they're responding is, you know, I don't mean with these girls, I don't know how they're responding, but these poor toddler situation. And you know, of course the survivor, is that the 5-year old who did the shooting? Of
yeah,
course?
Or not? Right.
I mean, that, you know, what, how is that poor, soul gonna ever recover in that environment? Sorry to say.
Well, you know, and that's the question I asked. You know, how do you, what kind of counseling?
Yeah, well, no. I mean, exactly. Counseling, huh? But anyway, the other thing I wanted to mention was we have this Reagan-appointed judge that's just ripping the Obama administration a new asshole over this Plan B. I don't know if you heard what he said. He accused the administration of hypocrisy into the rights of 12 and 11-year-olds to place an undue burden on women's ability to access emergency contraception. And finally, the kicker. You're disadvantaging young people, African Americans, the poor. That's the policy of the Obama administration. Okay. You can just sit the hell down. I'm like, all right now. This guy is some sort of Reagan appointee, judge. But it just shows you how, you know, way, way right everything is gone, you know, in the policy salons of this, country. Because they're, you know, I mean, you're gonna get this.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to keep coming back to this Plan B.
No,
but it's
don't.
Just,
don't
it's
apologize.
It's doing my head in. It's doing my head in because, you know,
well,
we're all about progress and making things more comfortable in life as, you know, things are discovered. And yet, we're not having access to it because of, and you can finish because of for me, because I don't know why, Bob.
Well, I don't either. Well, I mean, I fall back to the simple expedient of fear. You know, they're afraid of the right wing. Name of it here. The Prenatal Non-Discrimination Act. Now, this thing is listed as having a 95% chance of getting past committee and something like a 14% chance of enactment. This is the one that makes it a crime for anyone to knowingly or knowingly attempt to perform an abortion, knowing that the abortion is sought based upon the gender of the child. And I'm thinking, what? Now, that's what the right wing is doing. I mean, that's not some democratically enacted bill or introduced bill. That's what the right wing is doing. And yet the Obama administration is kind of working on that side, but with the Plan B business? No, yours is not the only head getting done in.
No, I'm just, you know, I'm sorry. I don't, you know, I'm sick of him with his everything on the platter policies, you know, be it energy or women's reproductive rights. You know, he's smiling at the Planned Parenthood, and he's going to do this all under this idea that he's representing everyone in the country in a manner that's acceptable. No, it's not acceptable to keep safe, effective pregnancy prevention from anybody who's bleeding. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm beyond it.
And frankly, that judge's criticism is well founded, but it's also kind of terrifying because that's sort of a little flag out there saying, well, maybe if you want to do this, we'll make sure that the voter suppression ID law, voter ID laws are upheld.
Well, I mean, no, but that's yeah. But
and
I
we're
going
and we're going to cite you for it.
Well, it's, yeah, but the thing is, they just constantly leave themselves wide open, over and over again. Because you can't fault this judge for bringing up the voter ID. That, I thought that was a interesting sort of observation. It's like, yeah. But somehow women's, bodies are always thrown under the bus with the Democrats, and, you know, it's just ongoing, I have to say. They ought to be ashamed of themselves with this policy, and they need to be called out. That's why I'm on it again. I just think, you know, I can't just paper this over.
No, no, go after it till they get it right.
No, much like that Pritzker woman who I was listening to Tom Hartman, he was trying to, justify that. And I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, it's like, I think all these, they have the Obama derangement. I just think it's on our side too, you know?
Oh yeah. No doubt about it. And look, while we're at it, I've been reading up a little bit because, you know, I get all those, can't you send us $3 emails from the Democrats and everything.
Which
I promptly just delete.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing else to really pay attention to, there's been this furor ongoing for about the past 2 weeks over Elizabeth Colbert Bush. Have you actually read up any about what she thinks and what she believes in?
No, I have no idea. Is it disturbing or is it okay?
She's all anti-Obamacare and frankly, for all intents and purposes, if she was running against anybody but Mark Sanford, she'd be a Republican.
Right. Okay. Well, that doesn't really, I'm not too terribly surprised, but it's still a bit dispiriting. It's like, you know, we're hearing about this person nonstop, but we don't hear about that. Much like the rest of these sort of center right freaks who are calling themselves Democrats now.
Right. And maybe that's what the Democratic Party is, and it's a tough thing to swallow if it is.
Did you
see that criticism that Charlie Pierce posted today of Bill Clinton for getting all squishy and cozy with Pete Peterson?
Well, yeah, he's been all close with them people. Remember when he had that private whisper with Paul Ryan? We want to get this entitled.
Yeah, please don't make me bump out of this segment with Careless Whisper by George Michael. Don't make me.
Yeah, well, you could do that, but I mean, you know, so we know what time it is with him. Well, that's interesting. I'll have to read Pierce. But on the up note, though, have you seen this song from the guy who wants to run against Miss McConnell in Kentucky? Now, that's some good stuff.
No, what?
It's called What About Us? And it's a country song he wrote. I forget the guy's name. He's running for Senate against McConnell. And it's an amazing sort of indictment on both the Democrats and the Republicans. He's just talking about basic people. And the idea is, he's from Kentucky. It's just amazing. I'll try to find it for you.
Ed Marksberry?
Maybe that's
it. Yeah, I got it here. What about us? McConnell opponent Ed Marksberry releases groovy video.
It's funny, and it's if you get a chance, check. Because I was
that here in a little bit. By the way, going back to Cleveland real quick, you got a note in from Dr. John. He said the Cleveland hero Charles Ramsey, and you know when I read his last name Ramsey, I went cousin, because that's one of those old family names in the background of my bunch, and you know we get around. Dr. John says, early reporting focused entirely on snarky, privilege-laden descriptions of this man. A piece from The Atlantic was particularly nasty, making snide fun of him talking about eating his McDonald's and his ribs. What it didn't mention is the end of his quote, where he said, and I paraphrase, says Dr. John, I saw this little white girl going up to a black man, and you know there's something wrong when you see that. Something wrong indeed, at least today in America.
That was the money quote. That was it. No. I thought that quote was like, and cut.
Yeah. And what Dr. John says is this is an ordinary man who did something that's extraordinary today. He paid attention to a plea for help, and he's paying for it, at least in some circles. Jesus.
Well, no. I mean, I don't, like I said, the McDonald's stuff is amusing, but I don't have nothing but respect and admiration for someone who would go out of their way to help a motherfucker at this point.
Right.
I swear. And so that's where I'm at with him, and I don't understand why he would be getting any kind of criticism. So you're saying it's more kind of making fun of him or something?
Yeah, look at the funny man.
Right. Well, I don't even know what to say about that. I mean, that's just par for the course. But that last quote is something that will be completely ignored, I'm sure.
Yeah, but it's real.
Mm.
I mean, that's I've got his audio too, if we get around to it. But that's very real. you know, when he looks up and says, you know, and something's wrong, you know, little white girl going up to a, and that's something wrong with that. Welcome to 2013 America, right?
You know, yeah. And as a father of two daughters, that's my refrain now. That's my answer to everything
now.
Yeah,
president, father of two daughters.
Oh, God. Yeah, anyway. The only other thing I wanted to mention, it's a different subject, but listen, we have like these, you know, Pete Peterson, connected, Rogoff and whoever, and their paper, that's a load of bullshit, the austerity paper.
Yeah, the one where they didn't carry the two.
Well, yeah, they're related also to that, Pete Peterson madness, and they've been completely discredited. Do you see any movement to repeal the sequester? Are they stopping austerity in England and Europe?
No.
No, I mean, so it just continues.
Why would they? And, you know, that's the point I've been trying to make. They like it.
Well, no, yeah, well, the thing about the European austerity is they will keep going with austerity until they've completely eliminated the welfare state. And then they may institute some path to growth. So over here, you know, it might be a little bit more difficult to do because it's such a big country and there's a lot of interest. But that's the same kind of thing that they would like to do over here. But the austerity has been completely discredited, and the idea is these pigs is making it okay for them and theirs to fly, but they're letting Head Start and all the other programs just be cut is just criminal.
No, see, the thing, Head Start is bad enough, and I'm not trying to prioritize prioritize horrors, but the one that really makes me put my foot through a wall is the idea that they're planes, you know, it's almost like something out of Mussolini's Italy. You know, he made the trains run on time.
It is.
The Congress has gotten the planes flying again, but they've literally left Granny to starve. I mean, they really are now. You know, I mean, it was again Charlie Pierce who dubbed Paul Ryan the zombie-eyed granny starver. They really are into granny starving now. It's no longer a euphemism. It's no longer tongue-in-cheek kind of dark humor. It's real.
No, and it's sort of, I mean, some of these people from the past, you sometimes wish they was around just to give you a quick assessment. Like Weber, you know, the one that came up with the definition of the state, that it has a monopoly on violence. The sociologist, Max Weber.
Yeah.
You know, because it's this country is now just turned to punishing the poor. Like, that seems to be the goal now. You know, it's evil when you have state instituting policies like that, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's evidence in my book of a failed state. Something I meant to mention to you a couple of minutes ago, that Pierce criticism of Clinton for swanning around with Pete Peterson. One thing that he points out is that Peterson is now running away from the word austerity. Now he is a long-term deficit scold.
No,
long-term debt scold. He's worried about the debt. And he doesn't like being called a fan of austerity.
No, austerity has never worked, though. That's the thing. Throughout history, it hasn't worked. You know?
No.
And right now,
but history means nothing to them, Sandra.
Oh, I know. But, I mean, Europe, they should be concerned because it was this kind of policy that brought us, you know, all sorts of fun people in Europe.
Yeah, that famous photo of the woman in Germany in post-World War I Germany feeding Deutschmarks into her fire to stay warm in the winter because the value of the Deutschmark, inflation had taken it to about, you know, $40 million to a dollar or some, you know, some just absolutely crazy number like that. They don't seem to understand that that the well-being of the general people is what drives the well-being of the rich.
Well, they're calling the Germans now sadomonetarists, Bob.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, you know, the Germans, they need to watch out. I mean, this is, all this is not really going to end well if they keep going at this rate.
You know, there's a certain irony in the, because in the United States and a lot of the world at large, we tend to remember Germany's really big screw-ups and not the things that they got right. But the fact of the matter is, there's a little bit of irony in that this austerity has a German has a sort of German origin or overlay to it, when in fact the idea of the social safety net and the social welfare state was more or less invented by Bismarck, was it not?
Well, and not only that, but it was a response to, you know, the horror of World War II. That was the payback for enduring that.
But I mean, if you go back to even before the opening of the dawning of the 20th century, Bismarck puts in place things like
public education,
pensions, and the very first instance of workers' compensation.
Right. Well, that was a response to, you know,
it was a response.
It was the collapse of the monarchy. You know.
Well, and it was also a generational response to the Revolution of 1848.
I mean, it was, you know, it's sort of so for them to be going for these banker types and the elites to be so myopic that they think that they can roll back what was established in response to total chaos, I don't know what they think is going to be the end result. I mean, look at Greece. I think the fascism is just running rampant there now, isn't it?
What did I see a story the other day that the Golden Dawn, which is that fascist party in Greece, is now distributing food, but they'll only distribute it to Greeks?
Yeah, well, so it's you know, I mean, that place is in a sort of a permanent depression, but one good thing is happening over there is France and now Italy, they're both sort of saying the austerity is over for them. So, you know.
Well, in light of the fact that that France is the nearly co-equal partner in the financial scheme that is the euro, That has some significant meaning, doesn't it?
Well, it does. They're still a debtor. You know, they're not a creditor nation at the moment either. I mean, but if the pigs all join together and say no more of the austerity, then, you know, the core is going to have to respond, or the pigs are going to break away from the currency. Something's going to have to give, because there is no end to this austerity as it's currently configured.
Yeah, it has to be. It has to be affirmatively checked. It's not, because it's self-perpetuating. Do I understand correctly?
Yeah, but the problem is, though, it's going to take you know, some sort of political solution, because, like I said before, it will continue until pensions, wages, healthcare, and all the good things that make life livable in industrial society is destroyed.
And yet there's a certain irony in this, Sandra, because you remember the Republican presidential process where they kept hollering, and to a certain extent even afterward, you know, we don't want to be Greece. And yet it's their policies in large part that are making us Greece.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just think, you know,
I mean, there's plenty of blame to go around, and I don't want to be understood as offering some sort of a pass just because somebody has a D after their name, especially the administration. But honest to God, they were the ones hollering, you know, we're going to be Greece, we're going to be Greece if we don't get the debt under control. Well, their idea of getting the debt and the deficit under control is what is quickly transforming us into Greece. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, it's just sort of, I'm just not too sure how far they're going to try to go in this country because, you know, the squeeze is really on and you cannot have 400 people controlling as much wealth as 180 million people below have. That's not sustainable. And also, they're quickly writing laws to destroy the benefits of Dodd-Frank, i.e. now they just altered it so derivatives don't have to be regulated again. So basically what I'm trying to say is they're inflating assets again with the rest of the economy flat on its back. So that means another crisis is coming.
And is it? Do I understand correctly that each crisis from here on out is going to be worse than the one before it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just horrific because inflating the assets again, and there's no underpinning of a real economy. I don't know if you know they plan on passing out that Google Glass to everyone, and you just sort of I don't know what's going to go on.
Put on your Google Glass and get driven around in your Google car.
Oh man, so yeah, it's just not really good. I mean, I wish I had something.
Yeah, but the Dow. Hey, well, no, I mean, let's be happy. The Dow closed at 15,056 today, right?
Yeah, but see, that's says nothing to me. It says we're heading for, you know, just another more.
The higher you go, the further you have to fall.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you
well,
know.
It is.
I don't know.
It is a little. It is a little bit funny. I mean, I do love these right wingers because they're if they weren't so damn dangerous, they would be. You know, we'd just put big rubber noses on them and floppy shoes and put them in a little car and have them drive around the circus. This same day, a note went out from an outfit called the Capitol Hill Daily, and it said, "Obama just allowed 13 new tax increases to further slow the economy, wreck the stock market, and make it even harder on the 12 million Americans already looking for work."
Oh.
And calling for impeachment as a result of it. On the same day that the stock.
Well, you know, I mean, I always listen to what these people say, and Obama was talking about $100 million. Maybe that's all it's going to take. Go ahead and impeach me. Just fill up my bank account.
Yeah, I'll go live on a little island somewhere.
You know, I lost my train of thought there.
Well, no, the I guess what I'm getting at, it used to be, because we're both old enough to remember the days of old Uncle Walter Cronkite, and the end of every newscast was, and the Dow Jones closed down today 13 points at whatever, and it was some sort of an indicator of the overall health of the nation. Well, that's broken, isn't it?
Oh yeah, no, that's completely decoupled. Yeah, I mean, it's responding to, you know, the sort of global corporate elite. You know, that it's no measure of what Main Street is doing, obviously, because last job report, we didn't create not one manufacturing job, and the rate of participation is at 1979.
That's... Well.
You know, so the number of people who are in the workforce is at the level of 1979, which is... You know, if you think about that, it's just mind-numbing. And
wasn't there a bit of a malaise? Wasn't that the word that was used about 1979?
Oh yeah, I mean, but it's just no. But when you think about the population increase and everything, you know, I think it's still a bright above 60%. But it's, you know, and for men, you know, men are being just walloped right now in this labor environment too. Yeah, you know, and I don't know about you.
When,
I don't want to have a bunch of men not working. Shit, that's scary.
No, that way leads madness. Because when you've got frankly, there's not, you know, that's a significant element of male privilege is that, you know, if nobody else is working, you know, men folk will.
I mean, and it's a function, you know. Anyway, yeah, I just thought that that sort of participation rate was a bit disturbing, and to know manufacturing jobs being created is also disturbing. So, and with this sequester, apparently it's front loaded, so or no, back loaded. So in the summer, people are saying that it's going to be really bad.
Yeah, that's the thing I read. This for as much as we've cataloged a bunch of bad stuff, this is not the bad part of sequestration. We haven't seen the bad part yet.
And you know, if I can just switch over right quick to the environment. Excuse me, the EU is trying to ban these bear pesticides that are killing the bees.
Right.
Do people realize that if bees go away, it's bye-bye?
Yeah, it
this is some serious. This is like outrageously serious, and yet the U.S. is not banning these pesticides. That's the thing that I was struck with. It's like, what the fuck does it take to not cater to these world-destroying corporations, Bob?
See, I don't think there's an answer to that because at this point, this is the country where if you're corporate, you pretty much get what you want. I did a radio interview with a station up in Pittsburgh today, a public radio station. I think it'll air on the weekend or something. But we were talking about this new report out from the EPA this week, which is horrifying in its own right. 55% of the rivers and streams in this country, Sandra, are impaired. And only 24% of rivers and streams in this country are listed as being okay. Now, when we talk about impaired, we're talking about mercury, we're talking about the pesticide runoff, fertilizer runoff, the stuff that comes out of mountaintop removal. I mean, for instance, you know, I mean, Pittsburgh is it's geographically recognizable because it's the land of the three rivers, right? You know, Three Rivers Stadium, all of that. Because the Allegheny and the Monongahela come together to literally form the Ohio. Well, I found out in preparing for this interview, I found out something I didn't know before. Now, just kind of let this one roll around for a little bit. There are 40 days out of a 365-day year. There are 40 days out of a year when, in Pittsburgh, it is unsafe to even touch the rivers. Touch.
I mean, isn't that what we were dealing with in before the EPA was in existence? That
it's
kind of
why the EPA came into existence.
Because of rivers catching on fire by themselves.
Yeah, and you know, Jack in Shreveport just wrote in. He said, "I'm on board with Sandra. I tweet bee stuff all the time. It's a big, big deal."
No, I was just reading an article about here in California. You know, you have beekeepers from all over the country to pollinate the almonds, and you know, and it's like, you know, maybe a third of them aren't there anymore, and they're talking about they've never seen that sort of loss in bee population.
But see,
there's
another aspect to the bee story that I find horrifying as well, and it's kind of emblematic. We are esoteric here, aren't we? Bees. No, but this is fascinating to me. The toxins are killing the bees, but there's another aspect that's killing them too. You know, like you just mentioned, they truck the bees in to pollinate almond groves or nectarine groves or apricot groves, whatever. Well, there are apparently, and it's not something you really think about because, you know, they're fucking bees, right? I mean, they're supposed to be there. But they're trucked in on semis.
Along with their keepers.
Right. And what happens is that's a 365-day-a-year phenomenon. Well, in the natural life of a bee, you know, we've got that, you know, that old cliche, as busy as a bee. Well, bees aren't always busy. When the cold weather comes along, they go into their hive and they do that sort of, you know, harness mending, if you will, that you do in the winter. I mean, it's reflected in a lot of different species. But what happens when you truck your bees from point A to point B and you're just all over the country 365 days a year, they are literally working the goddamn bees to death.
To death, yeah.
And
well,
that,
I mean, no.
But that's a metaphor for the whole country.
No, I mean, no, I just thought the whole trucking them all over the place was, you know, hideous and, you know, the eye-opener reading about it. But it was also just disturbing that you identify some problem in this hideous situation, and yet the interests are so powerful that the government won't or can't stop what's killing something that we all need to continue to eat.
Right. Marty's reminding me right now. He said, didn't Einstein say something like, without bees, man has 4 years to live?
Well, it's just something drastic. It's just not, you know. And another headline that I thought was a bit special was this 400 parts per million threshold that we're kissing right now, which hasn't existed in like 5 million years or when alligators were swimming in the Arctic or something crazy like that.
Alligators in the Arctic.
Oh, yeah. My God. So,
polar bears ain't going to be on the top of the... Yeah, you better find an ice floe.
Yeah, well, I mean, just some sort of crazy kind of...
But like Brad Friedman pointed out, there's a freak snowstorm in May, and Fox News can't get on the air fast enough. Oh, some global warming. It snowed in May.
Oh, no. I mean, the idea that they got people convinced that the climate change is related to that sort of stuff as opposed to watts. And I mean, I guess trying to explain it as it is what, too difficult for their minds? Or they just want to lie?
No, they're taking marching orders. I'm pretty sure that Emery and Eileen, you know, sitting there in their lazy boys, could comprehend the problem if Fox would quit telling them it's not one, that it's it's made up.
At least we're hearing more of it not from Fox, but in general, the global warming is kind of being dropped, which to me is a good thing because, like you said, you know, people associate global warming with increased temperature as opposed to increased energy activity, which is what is going on. I mean, I made the mistake of looking at this documentary on the the thermal Himalayan circulatory business, you know, the huge currents.
Yeah, yeah.
That run, okay. They're talking about, oh, you know, we may change it and it might slow down or change.
Well, and that's all part of you know, the desalination of the
right.
Oceans. Yeah, because
and the fresh, yeah, and you and it you know, this current is what makes a life bearable in all of Europe, by the way.
Yeah, because is this the point where we remind folks that Alaska and Paris are on roughly the same line of latitude?
Yeah, anyway, so it's just kind of, you know, and they're tying all this stuff up to, oh, snap, we kind of need to have ice at the top of the world.
It would be nice. It's nice when it's there instead of somewhere else.
And if it's even more disturbing that apparently the White House had a meeting or is having a meeting with climate scientists to be briefed on the disappearing, the death ice spiral that's going on, or lack of ice, you know, where they're being told that it could be ice-free by 2016.
And see... The thing is, you and I think about this, and hopefully somebody who's talking to President Father of Two Girls is thinking about this too. There are patterns that happen. you know, human beings respond to the environment in which they live. That seems kind of a simplistic statement, but it's apparently hard for a lot of people, especially right-wingers, to get their heads around. You remember when the CEO of what was it, Shell or Exxon, said, if Iowa turns into a desert, we'll go where we can grow corn again.
Well, no, we'll adapt. That's what he kept repeating.
Yeah, we'll adapt.
We'll adapt.
But the fact of the matter is, within recorded human history, and even within the history that isn't necessarily recorded, there's plenty of evidence to be found of what happens when the climate changes dramatically. You get these massive out-migrations of people who don't want to die.
Well, no, that's why it makes me laugh when I think of, you know, which is, you know, apparently happening in some circles where these super rich people think that they can glom on to, northern areas or the Himalayas. They think that they're going to be able to rest comfortably with the zillions of people doing what? No, they're not going to rest comfortably. They're going to be eaten alive. Ain't nobody going to put up with that if that's the fantasy they're dreaming about.
But I think it's certainly within their plans. I mean, I went back and I'm ashamed of myself. Not really. I went back and watched Soylent Green not too long back. I do that every couple of years. It's back when Charlton Heston wasn't completely awful, and you've got Edward G. Robinson just making it. I mean, he makes that movie, and there. Granted, you know, the premise at the start of the movie is that it's, you know, New York City 2011 or whatever, and the population of New York is 43 million. Well, no, we're not there yet. We're not at that point, and we certainly don't design. We're not as bad interior designers as they apparently thought. But the fact of the matter is, there is Soylent Green levels of hunger in plenty of this planet that's outside here. And, we just prefer not to notice it. But what's happening, for instance, going back to what you were talking about with the sequester, we're going to get to start noticing it here. Because do you think when somebody, are we just assuming that, and I keep talking about granny, because everybody loves their grandmother, but do you just think that when our folks who are dependent upon things like Meals on Wheels, are they utterly alone in this world, or is there somebody who loves them who's a little bit younger who's going to get really, really pissed about this, Sandra?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think there's that they're sort of poking a stick at by doing all this shit, because in the minds of these people, they don't think that government exists. And they're gonna find out otherwise, because the U.S. is nothing but a entity that has a huge military and a bunch of transfer payments.
Yeah.
And those transfer payments are being effed around right now, and it's only gonna get worse, and there's gonna be a response to it.
Because that's only human.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, yeah.
Oh, you'll find this interesting. Back to the bees issue, Mark just wrote in, and he said in China they're already hand-pollinating their pear industry with feathers dipped in pollen and then delivered by people with long sticks off of ladders. You know, I guess it's next thing, it's a growth industry. Personal pollination.
I mean, I don't mean to laugh, but that just sounds unbelievable.
But it's, you know, otherwise, you know, you just don't get pears. And it's...
Well, the cassava crops, you know, which, is, I don't know, 300 million people are dependent on it, that food is at risk because of increased temperatures and this new beetle that's destroying it. I was reading about that today, and I just thought, oh, my God. And they're all attributing that to climate catastrophe or whatever you want to call it.
I forget where I read about
it. Right now.
You know, we've got this hellacious gypsy moth problem. I read somewhere, and I can't remember. But I found out where the gypsy moth problem came from. That was another case of, you know, capitalist human greed. Because gypsy moths were imported to the United States in the hopes of creating an American silk market. No kidding.
Oh wow!
And then they got loose, and they're wrecking timberlands. But well, some guy in some skyscraper, you know what we need to do? I'm tired of paying them damn Chinese for that damn silk. We need some silk we can make right here. Well, you know, the silkworms feed on mulberry leaves, and apparently the same process does not take place if they're just eating, you know, your elm.
Mm.
But they do. And you know, that's so often the case.
They're growing champagne grapes in England now, but oh no, they're also looking at the possibility of malaria in Great Britain in the next decade. I was like, this is out of control.
Yeah. And
you know?
Yeah, well, and that malaria, you know, that malaria ban moves north with warm weather. Charles C. Mann covered the whole malaria thing in that book of his, 1493. And it's horrifying. You know, he said he flew from Brazil to, China or southern China, where they've got a rubber tree growing area. And he said, nobody even thought to check my boots. He said, the possibility of wiping out the entire world's rubber crop is a matter of, you know, one gene going sideways. And if that happens, you know, and this is, I don't want this to start sounding like, you know, Coast to Coast AM. I'm not going after George Norrie's job or anything. But these, you know, these are very, very real possibilities. And the response of the corporatists is, well, you know what we need? We need a better bug spray. And somebody get Monsanto on that rubber tree and see if we can't genetically modify one to resist whatever.
Well, I need to let you go, but I gotta ask you if you've been following, it's just a matter of what you read, but I had no idea that huge swaths of Pennsylvania has become just sacrifice zones fracking.
Yeah.
I mean, because the illness, I mean, everyone's just ill.
Yeah, and there's nothing funny about it, but a woman created, she took the Smokey the Bear image, because if anybody who's seen Gasland has seen that famous scene where the guy opens his tap and lights his lighter and fire shoots out of his faucet, you know that thing?
Right, right.
Okay, well, that's in the eastern fracking areas. And some very enterprising, creative woman took the Smokey the Bear image, you know, only you can prevent forest fires, and she changed it, and it says now, Smokey says, only you can prevent faucet fires as a means of, you know, protesting fracking and everything that it's doing, once again, to human health. And lo and behold, she has gotten a Nasty Gram cease and desist letter from the lawyers for the U.S. Forest Service, who are threatening her with 6 months in jail if she doesn't stop promulgating her only you can prevent faucet fires T-shirts, and she's not even out there trying to make a buck. She's just trying to raise consciousness.
Who's trying to stop? I mean, what are the grounds?
That it is copyright infringement. That is an owned image of the United States government. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, this woman's a United States citizen.
I know, but the government is. So the government is coming after her.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, we know who. Yeah. I mean, anyway, I just was kind of horrified at, you know, just sort of the state of play with how, you know, it's going to be okay for areas to just be sacrificed, along with
the
people.
Right, and I don't mean to be cynical or anything, but I'm kind of used to that. I mean, we've been part of the sacrifice zone for a very long time, and frankly, it is the fact that they got away with it in Appalachia that means that they can get away with it in Pennsylvania, or at some point in New York, or Ohio, or wherever, you know, and to some degree or another, fracking is happening almost everywhere. You know, they're fracking California now.
Oh, yeah, no, you know. I mean, you know, but at any rate, it's just, I don't know. I don't have anything else for you that's remotely positive, so I'll just hang up while the going's good.
Well, I think maybe we'll give a listen to that song here in a couple of minutes. Thanks for bringing it to my attention.
All right. Have a good evening.
All right, Sandra. Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
And we will. We're gonna give that a listen here in a second. My conversations with Sandra. They always leave me feeling like I know more than when I picked up the phone. And it's part of what makes this such a special undertaking. Thanks, Sandra. Before I go over to that What About Us video, I want to back up to something that I just saw coming in. You remember Joe Manchin, who got so many progressives so excited because he offered up that weak-kneed little pissant bill that got shot down in the Senate, and now he's saying, oh, I think we can get the votes now. I mean, there's pressure. Well, before you get, and if you're a listener to this program, you don't think this, but, you know, tell your friends and neighbors. If somebody says, Joe Manchin, you know, he's standing up to the NRA. Yeah, tell them, you know, please, don't buy into the con. I just got an email a few minutes ago. There is something being bandied about in the Senate of the United States. It's called the Water Resources Development Act of 2013. And the reason I thought about this was based on what Sandra was talking about. The Water Resources Development Act of 2013. Now, with an Orwellian name like that, you just know that ain't nothing going to get developed, but something's likely to be polluted out of. It's on the Senate floor now. It'll be banging around for the next couple of weeks, according to my source here. What's it about? It's about pushing back against the EPA because the EPA won a little victory when the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals said, oh, hell no, to this idea that the EPA can't veto a permit for a mountaintop removal operation. Here, for instance, if I've got what I think I've got, as soon as it loads, yeah, this is the Joe Manchin amendment. Oh, God. Purpose. Mr. Orwell, would you like to read this?
Oh, thank you. To preserve the authority of each state to make determinations relating to the state's water quality standards. Provide for the conservation and development of water and related resources, to authorize the Secretary of the Army to construct various projects for the improvements to rivers and harbors of the United States and for other purposes.
This is Title 12. This is Joe's little amendment. The Clean Water, Title 12, at the end of the bill, add the following, Title 12, Clean Water Cooperative Federalism. Notwithstanding subparagraph A2, the administrator of the EPA may not promulgate a revised or new standard for a pollutant in any case in which the state has submitted to the administrator and the administrator has approved a water quality standard for that pollutant unless the state concurs with the administrator's determination that the revised or new standard is necessary to meet the requirements of this act. You got that? Let's go back. What that means is that the EPA cannot revise its own water safety regs if they have at any time received from a state a water quality standard for that so-called, for that pollutant and approved it. So let's say 20 years ago, the state of West Virginia, Stan, submits a water quality standard for Elodium Fosdex, the shaving cream molecule in streams. 20 years later, we find out that that standard is 1,000 times too high for human safety. Well, what Joe Manchin is saying here is that the EPA, even with science in its hands that says that there's a thousand times too much Elodium Fosdex, the shaving cream molecule, in that standard, that the EPA cannot promulgate a new standard. Meanwhile, with regard to federal permits issued, with respect to any discharge, if a state or interstate agency having jurisdiction over the navigable waters at the point where the discharge originates or will originate determines under paragraph 1 that the discharge will comply with the applicable provisions of, the administrator may not take any action to supersede the determination. Guess what? That little paragraph there means that nullification has put on its coat and hat and gone to Washington, D.C. Now, I know we've all gotten a little bit used to nullification being bandied about in places like West Virginia and South Carolina and Tennessee and Alabama, and I don't have time for the rest of them. But this is the introduction of nullification into the federal government itself. And I told you about the spruce mine being permit being vetoed a little bit ago. Yeah. Here's Joe's amendment regarding that. The administrator may not withdraw approval of a state program under paragraph 3 or 4 or limit federal financial assistance for the state program on the basis that their administrator disagrees with the state regarding the implementation of any water quality standard that has been adopted by the state and approved by the administrator under Section 303, or the implementation of any federal guidance that directs the interpretation of the state's water quality standards. In other words, let's just shut down the EPA. Everybody, remember Idiocracy, and brought to you by Carl's Jr. Why do you keep saying that? Because they pay me every time I say it. Brought to you by Friends of Coal. Why do you keep saying that, Joe? Because they pay me every time I say it. God almighty. Permits for dredged or fill material. Now, there's another one of those Orwellian euphemisms. Fill material. See, once upon a time, under the Clean Water Act, in something called the Buffer Zone Rule, mining waste was called waste. And it could not be dumped in a stream because it was, well, you know, waste. However, the Bush administration, because they the Bush administration understood how easily confused we all are, changed the rules so that mining waste was no longer mining waste and is now merely fill material, at which point they said, go ahead and dump it in the streams, boys. Hey, don't just fill up the goddamn streams, fill up the goddamn valley. We'll make some flatland. Ain't got no flatland in West Virginia. Need some flatland. Got to put a Walmart on it. It's jobs. It's uniquely American. Well, there you are. This amendment says that the EPA cannot withdraw a permit, which is what the EPA, in vetoing the spruce mine permit, did. But what I find fascinating is up in that other section is that apparently mountaintop removal operations are now actions of the state. No, really. This is a senator whose own constituents are being poisoned to death. Who likes to talk about, well, we need balance. Well, he's going to get all his balance. He's going to balance the needs of the coal industry on the backs of poisoned people. Marty, this is an amendment to the Water Resources Development Act. Wow. Of course, one of the biggest fans of mountaintop removal is chinless Miss McConnell. And that takes us back to Ed Marksberry, who is now running for Senate as a Democrat from the Commonwealth of Kentucky, because Ashley Judd didn't have the stomach for it, I guess. And we found out why, because they were, because McConnell was busy preparing to try to utterly destroy her, if not, you know, maybe drive her to suicide, because they were taking into account the fact that she had self-confessed a problem with depression. And so they were willing to attack her until they hopefully would destroy her. I think maybe I wouldn't have the stomach for it either. Ed Marksberry declared his candidacy in this past December. Let's see what this video is all about. Yeah, we got time.
Hi, I'm Ed Marksberry, and I'm running for U.S. Senate. I'm a working class guy who wants to be a voice for those who are not being represented in Washington, D.C. I hear you, and I think it's time we all stand and say... For those of you who send your sons and daughters to fight the rich man's wars. And I'm fighting for the small mom and pop businesses being crushed by the corporate stores. And let's not forget about the American farmers who sweat and bleed all their lives while the climate change deniers watch them wither on the vine. Senator raised $20 million to steal your vote. While college graduates with huge debt are just looking for some hope. Congress gives tax breaks to send our jobs overseas, while those in unemployment lines just stand in disbelief. Cost of Medicare, while Rupert's Fox News just spreads more lies and fears. You know, religious freedom is everyone's right, but equality for all is such a noble fight. You can purchase a slaughter gun with the intention to kill, but they refuse to address the LGBT marriage bill. What kind of world have we made for our children? Is there any way we can stop with all this killing? $1 billion and nobody goes to jail. But Congress cuts the education budget. Now guess who fails? Congressmen open their doors for the highest bids, but could care less about those who educate our kids. Mother Nature's crying and begging for attention, while the fossil fuel companies turn their backs on redemption. Corporate profits are at a 50-year high, while the middle class income's on a 30-year slide.
Bye.
Roxbury, and I'm running for U.S. Senate, and I approve of this message. Heck, I even wrote this song.
Well, dang. I think if we say nothing else, I think we can certainly say that Ed Marksberry has more creativity than probably 99, any other senator up there right now. I realize we were just playing audio. There is a video that goes with this. Just look up Ed Marksberry, What About Us. It'll probably kick you to a Louisville Courant story. That's where I found it. His slogan, send a carpenter to Washington. Did you notice? Because I did. Because I'm funny that way. Did you notice that while he mentions the hydrocarbon energy industry without redemption, blah, blah, blah? Now, Eastern Kentucky is a mountaintop removal nightmare. I know mountaintop removal is a kind of a mouthful, but that's a pretty quality, that's a quality rhyme and a quality song. Reckon why wasn't there any mention of mountaintop removal? I can offer a guess. Because for a statewide race, saying you're against mountaintop removal in the Commonwealth of Kentucky is political suicide. Because it'll bring the Kentucky Coal Association, every coal company operating in Kentucky, and a whole bunch of their Otne Ute Itbre Irkers way out knocking on doors just to defeat you. Isn't that sad? Because, you know, he touches on a lot of hot-button issues for Kentucky in that video. Marriage equality, LGBT rights. He knows that there are pockets of civilization in Kentucky where that'll get him votes, not take them from him. I mean, this is Kentucky, and he references slaughter gun. That's the phrase, as Marty points out, that he uses to describe an assault weapon. Marty says, I think he's going to be a more difficult target to hit than maybe Ashley would have been. And he will remain that way as he does not openly criticize the holy orthodox dogma of coal. Catching up with a little bit of email, going back to something that Tamara wrote in. She said, education, austerity, Elizabeth Smart. The following headline, paraphrasing a quote by Elizabeth Smart, could, with a few modifications, apply to all of us. Abstinence education teaches rape victims they're worthless, dirty, and filthy. For example, corporate-run education teaches poor people that we're worthless, dirty, and filthy. That is deeply true, Tamara. She also says, in regard to European bees, the other thing that's emblematic about the European honeybee, it replaced the native bees. There was a bee genocide that preceded the European bees being worked to death. I learned that from Charles C. Mann. And that's true. The honeybee, as we understand it, did not exist in North America prior to 1492 or 1493. Most of us living on the North American continent have no idea what this continent looked like prior to the so-called Columbian Exchange. The trees were different. The crops were different. No, there were no apples here. There were no peaches. There were no grapes. There were different things. And they were largely supplanted by Euro crops. So, and the same for the pollinators. Tamara is absolutely correct. how about that? Marty says that Ed Marksberry was on Nicole Sandler's show today, and that she did ask him about mountaintop removal. Well, hot diggity damn, golf clap for Nicole Sandler, even knowing the mountaintop removal exists. You go, Nicole. Thank you. Now we got to get her. We got to get her all edumacated about the AIC Act. Thanks for letting me know that, Marty. And Jack says that stuff I heard y'all saying about Colbert Bush was pretty darn troubling. I haven't heard much about it, as y'all said too. But it's there. Let's see. Let me see if I can find the story real quick. It'll only take a moment or two of typing. Here we go. Ah, there it is. It's over at Think Progress. Scott Keyes is the author. And he opens his piece by saying, and this is from 2 days ago, if I told you what Elizabeth Colbert Bush was against, President Obama's budget, many parts of Obamacare, you wouldn't guess she's a Democrat. But if I told you what she's for, marriage equality, a woman's right to choose, expanded Medicaid, you'd never guess this is South Carolina. Isn't that an odd dichotomy or odd comparison to set up? If I told you XYZ, or if I told you ABC, you'd never believe she's a Democrat, but if I told you XYZ, you'd never believe she's a Republican. That's how that should, but it didn't. It's, you would never guess this is South Carolina, which is apparently something written by someone who might not be that familiar with South Carolina, because there's plenty of people who advocate for and need for something like expanded Medicaid in South Carolina. I know some of them. From time to time, we'll hear from David in South Carolina. Scott Keyes describes her as, it's as if you threw Paul Ryan and Nancy Pelosi in a cocktail shaker and made sure the resulting candidate never set foot on the Appalachian Trail. Appalachian Trail, that's a dig at Mark Sanford and a well-deserved one. So the election is underway. Here's what she says about unions. I'm proud to live in and support a right-to-work state. Remember, this is a person who is registered as a Democrat saying this. She said this in support of a state law in South Carolina that makes it harder for unions to organize. Not content to have done that, however, she also went ahead to attack the National Labor Relations Board because it stepped in favor of workers who were retaliatorily discharged at a Boeing operation in Washington. Her response, because Boeing, remember, wanted to move one of its plants from Washington State, where workers have protections, to South Carolina, where workers have none. She said, this is a right-to-work state, and NLRB had no business telling Boeing where they can locate. Last time I heard anybody saying that, it was Nikki Haley, the South Carolina governor. And this is a classic case of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Makes for some ugly, ugly politics. And she says, and this is a quote from the story, we need to get our fiscal house in order talking about the deficit and the debt. And then she talks about what a defender of the Second Amendment she is. And apparently, if I understand correctly, this thing is a toss-up this evening. You may take issue with me, and that's fine. But it's hard not to see this as a win-win situation for conservatives and Republicans in South Carolina. And not damn much in the way of a victory for anyone who calls themselves progressive. Isaac letting me know that Mark Sanford leads Elizabeth Colbert Bush 53.7% to 45.8% with 42% reporting in South Carolina's 1st Congressional District. What does that say? You know what it says. And the funny thing is, the Republican Party in South Carolina doesn't even like Mark Sanford. This is one creepy son of a sea cook. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. Thanks for the update, Isaac. Jack writing in from Shreveport under the subject line, Welfare State. It is simply not possible for people and families to respond to the economic environment as capital and corporations do. There must be some mechanism for compensating real people for the quick flow of capital, else we must come to the conclusion that capitalism is not survivable. Not capitalism is not sustainable, because we all know that capitalism is not sustainable, because capitalism is founded on the premise of unlimited consumption. The question, though, is much more appropriately put by Jack, who says we must come to the conclusion that capitalism is not survivable. Yep, Mark Sanford declared the winner in South Carolina. I don't know how they welcome new Republicans. Maybe by giving them their own anti-Obamacare bill to sign. Of course, they would have given one of those to Elizabeth Colbert Bush, too. Survivable. Not sustainable, but survivable. And right now, from the way things look, with the so-called sequester getting, as Sandra noted, worse and not better as the months roll by, capitalism will not be survivable for a number of people. Well, hell, capitalism was not survivable for a number of people in West Texas. Because that was one of capitalism's finest hours. The absolute abnegation of a regulatory scheme in favor of jobs. Diane Sweet with a post over at Crooks and Liars. Maybe you've seen this. Maybe you know this. One of the reasons that Rick Perry had to ask, no, he didn't demand. If the president was a white guy, he'd ask, but he demanded that there be swift federal aid to West Texas, even though Rick Perry is opposed to federal aid, that there be swift federal aid to West Texas to help in the aftermath of the explosion of the capitalism plant there. Well, guess what? There's a reason they'll be needing that federal aid, because Texas doesn't have the money to deal with it, even if it is Texas. They don't have the money. If they had the money, they wouldn't turn loose of it. Some rich man out there needs, some rich white man needs a tax cut. Right? But beyond that, there's a reason why they need that federal aid. And it's this. Simply put, the fertilizer plant that blew up in West Texas was carrying only $1 million of liability insurance. $1 million in liability insurance to cover the deaths of 14 people, injuries to 200, and God knows millions of dollars in property damage. The insurance industry itself is saying that the property damage, or the damages all told, come to somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 million. this only came to light because people, lawyers, had stepped in to try to get compensation for the people who were slaughtered in the blast, whose homes were blown away in the blast, who were mangled, maimed, injured in the blast. Texas Betsy pointing out, in Texas, all our money goes for corporate tax cuts. See, if you want, I mean, the right wing does this all the time. Why in the hell can't we? If you really insist on believing in a deity who holds things in the balance and occasionally makes things balance, well, consider that Rick Perry actually went to California, did a tour of California on Texas taxpayer money, telling California businesses that they were overregulated and needed to move to Texas because Texas was a better business climate. This is the same Texas Governor Rick Perry who found time, as we played the audio last night, to tell, what's the name of the outfit? Tony Perkins, Norman, that resisting gays in the Boy Scouts is the same as resisting slavery, that it's unpopular, but it's the right decision. Well, if you believe in that God who takes care of you know, the balancing act, then what happened in West Texas is a direct and proximate theological, if not scientific, result of what Rick Perry did going to California. This is far more a Greek approach than, say, a monotheistic approach. It is a response to that phenomenon that the Greeks identified and called hubris. Randy C. Roberts is a lawyer in Tyler, Texas. And he's one of the ones who found out that there was only $1 million in liability insurance on that on that ticking time bomb. And being a lawyer in Texas, very little surprises Randy C. Roberts anymore. He said he wasn't surprised to find out that it was such a pissant policy. He said it's rare for Texas to require insurance for any kind of hazardous activity. We have very little oversight of hazardous activities and even less regulation. States' rights, you know, states' rights. So it will be necessary for we, the people of the United States, seeking to form a more perfect union, to step into the breach and help out our fellow Americans who were blown away, blasted by capitalism in West Texas. It'll be necessary. And for most of us, we'll do it with a smile on our face. We'll say that that is an appropriate response, an appropriate function of government. But no sooner will the debris and detritus be cleared from West Texas than Rick Perry will be back out there hollering about how regulation is bad. And while I am not familiar with the more intimate workings of the Texas legislature, I feel comfortable in saying that there will be no bills being put forward in the meets every 2 years Texas legislature to address the fact that Repiglican pro-capitalist policies brought about that explosion as surely as did whatever spark that was lit. Yeah, I don't look for it at all. Right, Marty says, hence the Rick Perry business is booming cartoon in the Sacramento Bee that got him so upset. Jeremy, the phones work fine. 304-658-3333. Oh, hell, let's find out. Yeah, that's definitely a dial tone. Jack, writing from Shreveport, says, with regard to liability insurance, compare the Texas plant's $1 million liability insurance policy to what individual medical policy caps used to be, $2 million. And that $2 million cap now can turn out to be way too low if one has insurance. Well, hell, it's only $1 million here for non-economic damages on medical malpractice. Jack says that comparison may be instructive to show how lame that plant policy was. It's also instructive to show how little we think of people who have been butchered or maimed by some form of negligence or grossly negligent or even intentional conduct. Note in from Irish Dave. Mark the hiker Sanford has been declared the winner in South Carolina. He says the folks of the land of cheeses crackers must be so proud. Cheeses is lard. Amen and amen. Worlds without end. Jeremy's on the Skype line. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Bob.
What's up?
Hey, I just called to say that, did you hear about, Apple's tax dodge this week?
I read it in passing. It looked pretty horrifying.
Yeah, Malloy was talking about it last night, and they, skipped out on a $9.2 billion tax bill by buying back stocks.
That's some hellacious skipping.
Yeah, that alone would have covered the sequester, fully funded NASA, and about 10 other things at the same time.
Jesus. No shame.
So they've sent all their money overseas.
It's a good thing that Google's motto and not Apple's is don't be evil.
Yeah, but Google's not really any better than Apple.
No, I wasn't going to suggest that.
Because Malloy mentioned that too, right on top of that. He was saying how he has an iMac, but then he mentioned that Google has just as much money in assets, and they had like a $24 billion tax bill, which they've worked around too.
Well, see, Apple has been very good over the years at branding itself as some sort of hipster company, when in fact it's one of the most repressive, non-transparent, utterly opaque operations out there. I mean, we all love to hate Microsoft, and I'm chief among them. I found absolutely laughable the story that came out earlier today that Microsoft is in the process of testing a patch or an update that they have codenamed Blue to fix all the stupid shit that is associated with being a user of Windows 8. Like maybe they'll put the damn start button back.
Right.
And I know there's an aftermarket program you can run out there to do that, but still, that was Microsoft. But Microsoft is easy to hate, and they're as abusive as the next guy. I guess the lesson we're learning, Jeremy, is that where the corporate abusers of a generation or two generations past were, auto manufacturers and oil companies, well, in the 21st century, the abusers are going to be Apple, Microsoft, et cetera, Google. And just because they're warm and fuzzy and have cute icons or whatever, they're corporations, aren't they? Shouldn't we be involved in a little bit of rational thinking here and understand that corporations behave like corporations?
Yes. Have you possibly heard of the comedian Louis C.K.?
Oh, yeah.
Well, his new special was on HBO this month. And at the end of every special, he does a little bit where he tells something great, and then he says, but maybe, just maybe, and he tells the horrible side of it. Well, he went after Apple and smartphones, and we all have one, or a lot of us have one, and he said, they're great things, they connect you to the web, this and this and this and this, and then he looks at the crowd and kind of gets a wink on, and they all laugh, and he says, but wait, you were in on something else, but you're in on this one too, and he said, but maybe, just maybe, the people who make these things over in China and North Korea fucking hate their life so much they jump out of windows. And the whole crowd booed at it because they didn't want to hear the truth behind it.
Well, but it is the truth. And I'll never forget that story, Jeremy. The very idea that the response of Apple's surrogates in China responded to the suicides not by making working conditions so that people wouldn't want to commit suicide, but putting great big nets outside the building to catch them so they could return them living to the assembly line. You know, that's the Aldous Huxley side, or you know what I mean?
Or that story of the industrial fire in the clothing place where they walked every exit until the shift was over.
Yeah, and now we're finding with this building collapse in Bangladesh that the problems that led to the building collapse would not even amount to a 10 cents extra surcharge on the price of some piece of clothing that comes from one of those factories. 10 cents.
Saw that, and then there's another program out there. It's edited and then produced by Bill Maher, so right there, I should tell you something about it. It's pretty good. It's called Vice. It's a gritty look at different stories across the world. And I forget where it is, but it was in India this week. It was a story on it. And it shows the severe poverty between dead-ass broke, nothing, not even two sticks rubbed together, and then the filthy rich. These people that had nothing literally lived in cardboard shacks. 20 million in like a 9-square block. And then across the river, which is filthy dirty with pollutants, there's rich oil tycoons, coal tycoons, you name it, that have 20-story towers built for their house. They literally drive through the street with kids who are pushing carts to get their meager earnings with Lamborghinis going past them.
Yeah.
And these people see nothing wrong with it. They don't see any disparage in it. They kind of like turn a blind eye to it. It's pretty disgusting.
It's horrifying. And it's frankly, it's another manifestation of the really piss poor job, Jeremy, that the for-profit media do in this country. Because we are so inwardly focused here that our media think that journalism is a matter of making one individual's private horror a national story, when in fact the very public horrors of 20 million people, well, hell, there's not time in the news schedule for that.
Very true.
And frankly, I mean, and then, you know, then there's the really cynical side of that, and that is, you know why the news, you know why the for-profit media don't put that on the air?
Why?
Because Americans generally don't give a damn.
That's sadly true. And then if you look at it from another side, the big Massey collapse a couple of years ago, where they were stuck down below the ground for 30 days, the news focused on that because I do believe in their heart of hearts, they wanted to broadcast the death of these people they'd never get to as a shock value. Nothing else. They didn't care about the people. They wanted to have that done. And when by some miracle they got that tunneling tube down there and they all came out, it was great. But that was not their intention.
Oh, no. You're talking about the Chilean mine?
I'm sorry. Not Massey. Yeah, because in
Massey, with the upper Big Branch, those 29 individuals were flash incinerated where they sat, you can get the American news consumer to tune in for that, because it all goes back to what Don Henley wrote in Dirty Laundry. You know, the bubble-headed bleach blonde comes on at 5. She can tell you about the plane crash with a gleam in her eye. It's interesting when people die.
Not here, not my problem.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, it's India, it's those people. I mean, they're not even Christians, right?
it's so true, unfortunately.
I
just wanted to...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to see if you had missed that Apple store, if you'd caught it. And plus, to tell you, I don't know if it's on my end, but I'm definitely getting a business signal on your phone. And if I don't get a business signal, I get not enough circuits available at this time. Try again later.
Oh, that's weird. That sounds like that may be your end, Jeremy.
Could be Verizon.
Because I mean, I did have a couple of calls come through earlier. They hung up before I got to them.
Well,
you mentioned that Apple tax dodge story, because I'm so fond of compare and contrast, consider the fact that, okay, Apple gets away with taking umpty bajillion dollars offshore, but you know this dysfunctional Congress, the Congress that can't agree on anything? They're very close. Yeah. Both houses are very close to passing an internet sales tax. How much have you read about that?
I haven't read a lot about it, but I know they're trying to also pass that Internet Privacy Act, where basically anything that's copyrighted, it could take you down in a major way.
Yeah, well, there's that, too. And I think my congressman, no surprise, just voted for the new CISPA. But no, that I've found it because I've seen it referenced in some of the news release pitches that I've received, but haven't seen much on the for-profit media or even the media that I follow. The House and the Senate may very well soon come to an agreement on something that I think is being called, maybe I've got one acronym wrong, but the Retail Sales Fairness Act. Now, I'm not necessarily opposed to some level of taxation on internet on internet transactions. I'm not, because we don't sell anything for starters. But you know, I'm not opposed to the, because it's a little bit more broadly crafted than say most of the usual regressive garbage we get handed that hits poor people a lot harder than it hits the wealthy. Frankly, the very very poor don't have the ability to go shop online as to the degree that their wealthier counterparts do. But by that same token, compare again the fact that while the Congress looks like it may be able to agree that if you order a sweater from Sweaters R Us online that you should pay a tax, but they still can't quite find it somewhere in the fluid surrounding their spines, Jeremy, to pass even a 1/100th of one penny tax on stock transactions. Now, going back to what I said earlier, the stock market closed above 15,000 today on God knows how many millions of shares traded. We could, all those deficit troubles the Pete Petersons of the world are worrying about, we could probably get those sorted out rather lickety-split with just a minuscule tax on transactions.
Well, yeah, because most of those big firms, their supercomputers do a million or more transactions in a second. That's how they make these ridiculously huge profits on these hedge funds.
Right. So if there's a million transactions in a second, and we're, let's say it's a hundredth of a penny, well, somebody with better math skills than I can figure out how quickly that could add up to real walking around money.
And also, if we would close a lot of these tax loopholes for these big companies like Google, Apple, who hide all their money off-seas, Apple is sitting on, I believe Mike brought out a figure of between $150 to $200 billion in cash offshores. They could have paid that $9 billion off like it was chump change, but they won't do it because they have loopholes to get out of it.
Well, I mean, consider, and I go back to what Sandra and I were talking about. We are living in an America that is holding lotteries for children to be able to go to Head Start. They're holding, they're doing some sort of something similar to decide which elderly person gets a meal tomorrow. That's America in 2013.
And I'm pretty sure I've heard talk out there that the House and Senate are trying to get together to actually kill Obamacare on top of that.
Oh,
to
sure.
Basically make it unusable.
Yeah, and here I am. Maybe I'll have health insurance in January if, you know, all the stars align. And it, right, and so naturally, that's the story of my life.
Well, to make you feel better before I get off here, because you've got to go in a couple seconds, I had health insurance through the state of Vermont. I missed one payment 2 months ago. They canceled it. No late payment, no nothing. I re-signed up for it a couple weeks ago, and I finally got the denial for it this week saying I still have insurance. I don't have insurance. So I had to call back up, tell them I don't have insurance, explain what's going on. They put me back through the system that sorts you out, and I have to wait another 4 or 5 weeks to hear what their decision is.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
So healthcare is a nightmare no matter where you turn.
At least in this country. At least in this country. Jeremy, it's been good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks.
All right. Have a good night. Bye now.
You too. Bye.
Jeremy calling from Vermont. It is time to get out of here. Hey, we only ended $35 short of meeting Sal's challenge. Hopefully that can happen overnight. It sure would be nice. Thank you very much. And thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Most importantly, you who share your ever-so-finite time in listening. And thanks, of course, to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to John Fox down in Australia. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT.org, ACHEACT.org. If you haven't bugged your congressman lately about signing on to the ACE Act, it's time to call them again. It's time to letter them again. It's time to get them on the bill. Thanks. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.